morning, everybody. This is WTBI's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. Going to be with you for about 58 minutes. And today I have, and I mean this sincerely, I've known Dr. Cameron a long time. He's a great guy. I have the utmost respect for him and what he's done as a superintendent of schools in other areas, as an assistant superintendent in this area, and acting superintendent. We're going to talk about where we're at, how we got there, and what we're going to try to do, or they're trying to do, to save what we have, which, by the way, is magnificent. Now, you can send me hate mail. I get them all the time anyhow. I have the skin of an armadillo, so don't worry about it. We have a wonderful school. We have an urban, wonderful school district. And if we keep beating ourselves up for no valid, operative word, valid reason, then shame on us. I have really one quick announcement, and I want to make it. It's a long time away, but to me, it's wonderful. It's the 32nd annual Harry A. Bateman Jimmy Fund Fishing Derby. That's right. A family affair, no controversy, but it's going to be from 6 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Saturday, June the 1st at the Frank Conroy Pavilion at Anoda Lake. Now, no fishing license needed by anyone. And the bottom line for that is because that particular day is a fish-free day, I guess. I do most of my fishing at Big Y at the seafood counter. But there's 15 trophies and prizes. There's all kinds of, really all kinds of things. The sponsors, Dave Sporting Goods and Anoda Boat Livery. Put this in your calendar. Please put this in your calendar. And if you have any further questions or comments or whatever, you can call 413-464-5035, Steve Bateman. This is the reason I'm reading this. We need to get families back together. We really do. So without further ado, Forgua, soup du jour, my friend, and I would like to say that, Dr. William Cameron. How's it going, Bill?
It's going well, Bill. How's it going with you?
For an old fat ball guy, I can't complain. You know, I'm racing up to another birthday here pretty soon, wild man. So there you go. Yep. First and foremost, I want to confront some things, if with your permission. These budget layoffs, cuts, whatever, that's not because of us. Isn't it because of external funding?
Well, it's a little bit complicated. I'll try and simplify it. I don't think it's all that complicated, actually. What we've got here is a convergence of several factors. Probably the single biggest factor that's resulted in anticipated reductions in force, layoffs, is the fact that we have through this year a considerable number of positions that are funded out of temporary federal money. The acronym is ESSER, E-S-S-E-R. I can't remember. It's basically COVID emergency money that was provided by the federal government.
Yep.
And a great deal of it was spent on, in fact, just about all of it was spent on direct services to students to try to help them get back to where they were when the roof caved in on March 13th, 2020, and COVID started running the show. And so that money expires at the end of this school year. So if we're going to keep all those positions, then we'd have to cut a number of other positions. So there's the ESSER money. There's also, and this has gotten a great deal of publicity, there is also for us, until very recently, a state aid calculation, a Chapter 70, that's the name of the funding for the schools by that the Commonwealth provides, that was substantially lower than we had anticipated. Last year, the city of Pittsfield realized about $6.5 million additional dollars in state aid for Chapter 70. This year, Pittsfield, we were told when the governor's budget came out and DESE released the projected numbers, DESE being the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, DESE, the calculation was that we would get an increase of $650,000. In other words, it was 10% of what we got last year. And third is that the budget that the governor submitted included, and I could not explain this, the mechanics of this, because I really don't understand the formula in that kind of detail, but it assumed an inflation rate of about 1.5%. And so we're looking at, and by we, I don't just mean the school system, but we're looking at negotiated raises that in collective bargaining agreements. We've been told for quite a number of years, not only by employees, but by members of the city council, we're not paying people enough. So right. Now we're paying them better, and that costs more money. And there's inflation that affects health insurance costs. I'll leave it up to municipal officials to describe what that percentage is, but it's not negligible, believe me. No. And there are costs driven up by the state in services provided by outplacement of students and special needs. And so all of these factors come together. And what we wound up with originally was a projected shortfall of about $3.5 million. And we can't print currency. We can't do what the federal government does and borrow money for operating costs. So we had to anticipate that we were going to have to make substantial reductions. And since school districts are labor intensive, about 85% of our costs are in the people who work in the school district, that's where the savings generally had to be realized. Now, subsequently, Kristen Benke, who's the business manager for the Pittsfield Public Schools, and who's
Edward,
done a great
my
job.
My way to go.
Yeah, well, she's proven to be. Yeah.
Yeah, and I weigh a lot.
No, she's a very, very competent person. Anybody
excellent.
Who watches the school committee meetings knows how much information she has at her fingertips. She thought there was something suspicious about the calculation of our Chapter 70 money, specifically the fact that the state seemed to be undercounting the number of low-income students in Pittsfield. To make a long story short, she was right. There is a merger of databases that the DESE uses from another state agency, and we had students listed who are in the school district,
right,
who are low income by various criteria, whom the state's database did not show. And so, to its credit, after some really hard work by, for example, Tricia Farley Bouvier, who did a great job in working with, and I maybe should say, on DESC to correct these problems, they admitted there were mistakes, and they weren't necessarily DESE's mistakes, but they were using data that weren't wholly accurate. That's resulted in an anticipated increase in funds of almost $2.5 million. That means we still have a shortfall, but it's nothing like what we were looking at until recently.
Yeah. And I watched that, you know, because basically at my age and that hour of the night, I have nothing else to do. So I watch like all the meetings, the school committee, all kidding aside, I was so proud of her and the entire committee for, you know, she could have just said, well, that's what it is. But she did the research and found the mistake. Now, I know it's outside of your realm, But who made the mistake and how is it going to be fixed so we don't have to go through this next year? I've been in government in a long time where we find a mistake and sometimes we fix it and sometimes it lingers.
Yeah, I can't tell you what the answer to that is. I trust that this is, especially not just because Pittsfield's affected, but as I think has been publicized, about 1,500 kids in the state were lost track of in whatever the process was of coming up with the numbers for this formula. So Pittsfield is not the only community that was shortchanged. It won't be the only community that's going to benefit from finding all of these numbers. And the issue has to do I'll say it's an arbitrary threshold. Anytime you have to draw a line someplace, it's typically arbitrary. And as has been publicized, we were off by two students from having a 70% low income count.
Wow.
Two students. It turns out we had actually lost 11. Wow. And so this kicks us up into a different funding category. And it's, in some ways, it's both good and bad news for the community. It's good news that we're getting a substantial increase in Chapter 70 money, but the fact that 70% of the kids who go to school in Pittsfield now are considered to be low income by the Commonwealth is not good news for Pittsfield.
No, and from my, and I'm not an educator. I'm a criminal justice guy, but I always refer back to my days as the director of the Violent Youthful Offender Program, and how important education is, not only to keep the crime level down, but also for the individual. And when I hear what you just said, you know, it makes me think back to some of the ones I've had. I had a few that were very wealthy, and they were just spoiled brats. But a lot of the kids, and we deal with them, and you know, I hearken back to the old Taconic when the radio station was in there, and every day I would go in there, and every day, and why I'm so committed, every day, the interaction of the kids with the teachers, with the resource officer, at the point was Officer Gray, it just made me feel good. The interaction on Monday morning with the cafeteria workers when they come running off the bus, you didn't have to be Nostradamus to see that they hadn't eaten a whole lot over the weekend. So I applaud the committee, and I applaud the administration. It's a tough road to hoe, and the whole country's in a tough spot right now.
Yeah, and I can't say enough about the support we've gotten, as I said, both from our state representative, Representative Farley Bouvier. I know that Mayor Marchetti was also involved in these discussions to a considerable extent. And I think that the state could have said, well, you know, the numbers are what they are and people make mistakes, but it's too late to change it. It's proven not to be too late to change it. The changes are taking place in the development of the House budget.
Good.
But so they're working now at the accurate numbers.
Yeah.
So we're hopeful that that the numbers we're working with will be accurate. There's no state budget yet, obviously, and there won't be for some time. Yeah. But things are certainly looking up fiscally.
Hats off to you guys, and I mean that hats off because and Kristen, I'm going to have her on the show because she deserves to get some recognition for just saying, wait a minute, this isn't right, and not just letting it go.
Yeah, that's a good idea because she actually would be better able to explain what all of this in detail than I am. But I think that You know, she's got a difficult job. I mean, she's managing over an $80 million, $78 million budget, and all of the operations with that, with federal grants and so forth. I mean, it's a very complex thing, and she does an excellent job.
Yes, she does. And I will just make this comment, because it's a federal grant. Just be, and if this is for the audience, not for the school, you, Bill, or the school, or the city council. I hear people asking, well, we can do it. No, my experience, any federal grant comes with more strings than you have when you're making a carpet. So to say, I not so much with the school committee, but sometimes with the city council, I hear councilors saying, well, why can't we use this money? Well, because there's strings attached. There's a process going on now, if I'm not mistaken, and studying the schools and the number of schools and all of this. How's that progressing? And let me caveat that by saying what I love about this group, the administration, the prior administration with Dr. McCandless and now with Mr. Curtis and the committee, it's not knee-jerk. When they come and talk to you, I'm always astonished at the amount of actual data, you know. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah, that the school reorganization plan or process, I should say, there is not yet a clearly defined plan, but it's on the way. Yeah. There are so many factors in here. You know, we've just submitted, the council was very helpful in approving the last step in submitting what's called a statement of interest to the Massachusetts yep. School Building Authority. The plan there, if everything works out, which is not typically the case, yep. but assuming everything works as planned, we would replace Crosby Elementary School.
Yes.
And over a number of years, consolidate the number of elementary schools that we have, probably reducing from 8 to 6. And there would be three clusters of elementary schools that would be paired up with each other. This is what's been talked about the most. I'm not saying this has not been voted on, but the plan is looking at basically splitting the lower grades in one school or campus, the upper elementary grades in another school or campus, and then moving on to middle school. And this will be rolled out over a number of years. The one thing that we can do without MSBA assistance is reorganize the middle schools. And I will be surprised if in September 2025, we don't have an arrangement with our middle schools that looks substantially different than the one we have now. You know, I'm not here to editorialize at length, but middle schools came, they replaced junior high schools.
Right.
And there were problems with junior high schools. There were have been problems with middle schools. Middle schools are, it's a 30 some year experiment, and I'm not sure that it's a highly successful experiment. No. What we've discussed is actually having the elementary schools all feed into one middle school for say grades 5 and 6.
Okay.
And then those kids in the 5-6 school would transition into the other middle school for 7 and 8. That has some advantages in terms of curriculum, of enabling the teachers to focus more on instructing kids within a narrower grade span. And also we believe it will make the middle schools, which have a bad reputation, especially one of our middle schools currently is not highly regarded by a large segment of the community. We think we would make them academically better and much more orderly places by doing that. And that's very likely to be the first step that's taken. You know, with school choice, I, as you know, Bill, I was the interim superintendent in Lenox for about 20 months, about 3 years ago. And Lenox survives on school choice kids, not exclusively, but heavily from Pittsfield.
Sure.
And the influx into the Lenox public schools for choice, they don't have all that many slots. People think that, you know, it's an infinitely expandable thing for Lenox or some other district to accept choice kids. They can't accept all that many, but the largest intake of students is at kindergarten and sixth grade. And basically there are a lot of people who prefer Lenox for their children to go to middle school. We've seen, interestingly enough, we've seen a number of kids migrating back who have choiced out to go to high school in Pittsfield.
Yes.
And I think that's a good sign. It's not only financially a good sign, it's a vote of confidence in the quality of the schools that nobody wants to send their kids to schools they don't believe are high quality. And I look at that as a really positive sign that we're on the right track with our high schools. And what we need to do is get on the right track now with our middle schools.
And Bill, you've been around a long time and I've been around longer, but no school system is perfect. And I kind of get my back up kind of speak when I hear about, well, this one and that one and blah, blah, blah. Pittsfield is an urban school district that takes every kiddo that shows up at the front door, and some of them show up in good shape and some of them show up needing work. And that's pretty much in every school district, at least from the people I've dealt with through the years. And I kind of go along with your new concept, because I think what I don't hear, I hear curriculum and this, what I don't hear is maturity. You know, I can remember, I can't remember where I parked the car, but I can remember my days at North Junior High. You got there as a geeky seventh grader and you left kind of as a mature ninth grader. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's how I remember it. You learn to grow up in the seventh and eighth grade. And then you were grown up. That's just my assessment. So.
Well, you know, that probably was the case. And for many kids, it probably still is the case. The situation, and you and I have talked on your show before about these factors, that being a child or a young person now is so radically different than it was when you and I were in school. And I'm sure that a lot of people who are listening or viewing this were in school. The stresses that kids are under and their families are under are
amazing.
Are just magnitudes of difference between what it was like back in the, say, the 50s and 60s than what it is now. Again, we've talked about this before. The single greatest issue, I think, is social media. It has benefits, obviously.
Yeah.
I guess I should say obviously. Maybe they're not really so obvious to me, but for whatever's the case, a lot of people find it beneficial to be participating in social media. But the social media just create an environment that is it's not like anything that we would have experienced. It just creates a whole different perception of privacy or lack of privacy, and the ways that malice can be demonstrated over social media just make old time bullying or giving other kids a hard time pale in comparison. You can't escape from it.
No. And the stuff that's put up is nasty.
Yeah.
I happened to see just a clip of it with a psychologist who said he does a lot with kiddos. They shouldn't have a phone until they're this age. They shouldn't have access to the internet. And, you know, I agree with that. If you go and I also caution adults, because if we go out to eat, and I'm not going to mention the restaurant, but it's got two numbers. One's 9, and you got to guess what the other one is. You'll see whole families, the mom, the dad. At my house, and I understand I'm an old guy from a different era, but at 5 o'clock, you better be at the kitchen table. That's all I'm saying. And if my father said, "What did you do in school today?" If you said nothing, it was like a launch from Cape Canaveral. So,
The reason I mentioned social media was we were talking about the difference in school districts and the perception of difference in school districts. One thing that they all have in common is very heavy use of social media. And so problems created by it may manifest themselves a little differently in some districts than others. But I can tell you, I've been a superintendent in 4 different school districts, and there are significant differences operationally and in terms of the populations served and so forth, but they're all infiltrated by social media. And so you could go to the wealthiest school districts in the state, the highest achievement scores. And if people don't think that there are problems, social problems a lot of kids have in those districts, they're mistaken.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon here on WTBR-FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And now back to the Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
And I think, too, one of the... In this, I think the world of Kevin Moran and the judge that run the Eagle. But because the Eagle is headquartered in Pittsfield, if the least little thing happens and all of a sudden it's a news story, whereas, you know, and I don't want them other places, but I think you've nailed it, Bill. Society, the people who vote on these increases in school, they got under. This is a different world. I mean, I just got a blurb here. They've taken over the subway somewhere in New York, I guess. I don't know. Protest in Palestine. I guess the closest thing you and I can remember to it were the protests of the Vietnam War. But that wasn't to destroy our country. It was not to save us from going. What do you think the most difficult approach, say you have to close schools, which is kind of like the plan, what, without giving up any secrets, I like the concept of the like hub schools, but how are you going to facilitate that?
Well, what's happened this year is that, and this is going to, what I'm about to say is going to have to continue. What's
right.
happened this year is that we've had a number of 11, actually, I believe, 11 different community meetings.
Wow, good.
Some with very low turnouts, some with pretty good turnouts, to discuss what's not what's going to happen, but to talk about what people think should happen.
Oh, wonderful.
And what their reactions are to different models. If we, by we I mean the school committee in particular, but the city as a whole, were just to say, this is it, we're closing schools X and Y, and we're going to move all these district yeah. lines around and so forth without any consultation, there would be justifiable hostility.
Yeah.
You know, I hearken back to the lesson, which I, about the ballpark in Pittsfield 20 yeah. plus years ago. I think there would have been a different reaction to that if there had been a better foundation laid for yeah. what was going on. And frankly, there's nothing that matters more to people than their children's schooling, yeah. where they're going to school and what the schools are like and what the climate in the school is and what the academic program is and what supports there are yeah. for kids who are having difficulty. And we've got to make sure that we hear what people are saying about that sure. and not just hear it, but take it into account. And so the process for doing this is, so, as I said a little while ago, some of this can be done just on local initiative without right. any additional cost. I shouldn't say with no additional cost. Transportation could become an issue, but it's an issue we can at least manage.
Right.
But the others, to some extent, depend on assistance from MSBA, from the state. You know, we've had complaints for a number of years, and I don't hear them nearly as much as the superintendent does about the open space classrooms in Morningside and Conti. And I think that they were built with the best of intentions. Yeah. They apparently were, it was a sort of cutting edge model for education. It allowed teachers to work as group in collectives, so to speak, and to
promoting
collaborate
community.
And have students move around with different who are at yeah. different achievement levels.
Yeah.
But the problem is, as everybody who's had kids who go to those schools knows, is that there are distractions galore. And if you take kids who maybe having difficulty in school and there is constant noise from over here yep. and there are people walking around.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that it's bedlam in those schools, but it's difficult to concentrate.
Yeah.
And many teachers, I think, would prefer to be able to have a more controlled environment.
Yeah.
And from what I've heard from parents, either directly or through the administration, there are a lot of parents who would prefer to have a more traditional classroom yeah. focus. They think their kids would do better in school. And I suspect that in many cases, they're right. They would do better in school. So, you know, long-term, it's difficult to say what the schedule for this would be, but, those schools both look problematical. On the yeah. other hand, we don't want to just, because they're both important institutions.
Within the community.
In the communities that they serve. And yep. so, you know, the city probably is not going to want to just close them up. They were built to serve as community centers as well as
yes.
schools. They do now, and as they have in the past, served as community centers. And I think it serves the city well to have them continue to be community centers.
I would say because the Polish Princess opened, it was West Side then, now it's Conti, in the open classroom. And it was an experiment like, what was the other one? Whole reading, now phonics, just, and that
whole
worked
language,
out.
Whole language,
well.
Yeah.
Whole language, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that worked out well.
Those wars are still going on, those reading wars, by the way. But God.
Well, no, I mean, all I can say, God bless the nuns, they taught us phonics. So, to the point where we're ready to just blow a fuse. But we knew phonics. But when you go back and you say what the total concept of community schools, 50% of it has been a success. And that is they have brought communities together.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
I mean, they open up early in the morning and they're going at night. So that, as far as the educational piece, as someone, I agree. There's so much confusion and movement and, but now, how do you replace them? And I think you guys are not struggling, but you guys are working on that now.
Yeah, eventually. One thing that could happen would be, and this is, again, this is in the wouldn't it be nice stage at the moment, is that if in fact we can get a feasibility study underway for Crosby,
yeah,
we could actually build something that has two schools on the same campus, sharing some common spaces, but you would segregate the younger kids from the older kids, and they would function perhaps as separate schools, but they would share gymnasium, they would share library, cafeteria, auditorium, whatever. With the other schools, it might be that we would need as a transition, and the transition could take a decade or maybe more than a decade, but schools that are in relatively close proximity to one another would be like paired schools. And one of the points that Mr. Curtis keeps bringing up is that we need to have better economic integration in our schools. What we have are community schools which are serving neighborhoods that, not in every case, but by and large, are lower income areas of the city.
Yeah.
And we need to open those opportunities, if you will, up for those kids and have more of a mixed population in our clusters of schools.
Yeah.
And so it's likely to be the case that you would have redesigned attendance areas as this model moves forward. Yeah. Now, again, all of this is in the talking stage.
Oh, yeah.
I want to keep emphasizing that. Yeah. I don't want people to think, oh my God, what's going to happen in September?
So, there's no done deals.
Right.
Bill, we got to take a quick break. This is Dr. Bill Cameron, chairperson of the school committee, been a superintendent, assistant superintendent. These are not quick fix, easy solutions. So when I sit in a place like a coffee bar or something and hear people say, oh, why don't I just do this? Well, it's like, well, what school do you want to close? Or you want to, we got to cut taxes. What fire station? How many cops? So these are not easy solutions. These are not knee jerk reactions. This is 89.7 WTBR, channel 13, WTBR 89.7 and PCTV, channel 1301. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. Dr. Bill Cam. We are back. With me today, a person I have an enormous amount of respect for, is Dr. Bill Cameron. He's the chairperson of the Pittsfield School Committee, but he's also got a pedigree of back to education as superintendent and assistant superintendent, Pittsfield, and other districts. And where Pittsfield is facing, I don't want to say a crisis, but Pittsfield is facing the need to, I don't know, update, change, whatever. I'm lost for the word. And we're here talking about what they're looking at. Nothing set in concrete yet. What I admire about Dr. Cameron said too, they open these meetings to the public. And from now on, I'm going to see if I can get the announcements and I'll read it so that everybody can attend. Because you know my thing, it goes back to the same with voting. Don't vote, don't gripe. There it is. That's my motto. And if the same with this, if you don't go, you don't gripe. So the challenge, Bill, I think you've said it a few times, and I want to bring that out too. This isn't going to happen overnight.
No, this is certainly not going to happen overnight. As I said a while ago, we could take major steps at the middle school level because it doesn't involve any new construction, and the buildings are there. They were renovated about 20 years ago or a little more than that. They're in good shape, and we'd have to figure out transportation, but that would be, that's all a local set of issues. The others may need, as time goes by, may need assistance from the state. And of course you got the complication of Pittsfield's ability to go into debt,
right,
or to borrow money to issue bonds to pay for projects. And it's, schools are a hugely important part of the municipal government, but they're not the only important part. And I know that there's been talk about a new police station here almost since I started working in Pittsfield.
Me too.
Over 40 years ago. So there are multiple demands on public investment or for public investment, I should say. But we'll make this work. It will probably take 10 to 20 years before it's all resolved.
Yeah.
But you know, we've got, and again, I'm not saying anything that people aren't well aware of, but it's a different community than it was, say, when I moved here.
Yeah.
It's somewhat smaller in terms of the population. We have a much, much more diverse population, certainly of students, which suggests that the community itself is much more diverse. We have a lot of students who don't speak English as their first language. They're for a variety of reasons that I can't, and I don't think anybody locally has had much control over. The economic opportunities here aren't what they aren't once were for working people.
Yep.
And so these all have consequences, you know, in everybody's day-to-day lives, and they have consequences in the schools. There are a new set of issues to work with students, and the assistance that students need if they're going to succeed is different than it was 40 years ago. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense to say on the surface, well, look, you've got, I used to say this, we've had, when I first started working here, there were 12,000 kids in the school district.
Wow.
There are now about 5,000. That's a huge decline.
Fine.
And the number of schools that we have right now is the same as the day we started operating under the Proposition 2.5 regime.
Yeah.
And there were, I'll say, 10,000 kids in the district, at least at that time. And so why can't we just close some? It's not that simple. The space needs are not what they used to be. And it would really be for people who find that hard to believe, that you can't simply close schools because you've got so many fewer kids. They really need to go to one of these workshops and see what the issues are that have to be solved in order to move the system forward.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try and sit here and describe it in any detail, but the space needs that we have now are, we have fewer kids, but we have greater greater space needs per student than we did then. And so we can probably close a couple of schools over a period of time with the reorganization we're talking about. But we're not going to go down, be able to go down to a couple of elementary schools or something. And it's just not going to work.
For my other hat from criminal justice, I'm not a big proponent of mega schools. Because if you do your homework, you find out that a lot of the shootings and real bad situations in schools transpired in the mega schools. And I know some of it was cost effectiveness and all this and reduction. But also I like to think of a safety situation. I want to bring this up before we run out of time, too. You guys, you've struggled with, and I guess you've got a cell phone policy.
Yes, we have a cell phone. Well, we've had a cell phone policy for years.
Yeah.
What we didn't have was effective enforcement of it. And I think they're the bane of our existence, myself, in terms of education. If I could play caveman for a moment, I think the best cell phone policy would be a mallet to smash them every time the kids violate the rules. We can't do that, obviously. That's a kind of childish thing for me to suggest. But yes, we have a cell phone policy. The enforcement of it depends on teachers and administrators and parents cooperating.
Yes.
And so far, to the best of my knowledge, based on the presentations that the superintendents made, we have far greater support for this from parents.
That's what I'm hearing. Than
I was apprehensive was going to be the case. Yeah. I think a lot of parents realize these things are a detriment to the operation of a classroom where kids are actually able to focus on what we're trying to teach them. So, there are lots and lots of issues that have arisen. It's not a perfect policy. We may have to revisit it. Every school district I'm aware of has some version of a cell phone policy. And probably most of them have kids who will say, well, that's nice, but I'm going to use my cell phone when I feel like it. And there we go. But they are huge distractions. We've got complaints, quite heartfelt complaints from teachers that this was just a huge interruption in their ability to run their classes.
Yeah. We
tried something and we'll see, we'll give it a year and see what it looks like at the end of the year. And maybe we'll need to revisit it. Again, the policy is you're not supposed to use cell phones during the school day, except during lunch, basically. That's what that was not being uniformly enforced classroom by classroom by classroom. And I think that leads to, I'll say, confusion among students about what really the rule is.
Exactly. You know, going back though, I think it's so, I was just anecdotally thinking of 10 parents that we've conversed with, or 12 parents, two are upset about the phone policy because their kids are upset. Somebody has to be the adult in the room. I can say that because the views and opinions expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, School Committee, Peter Marchetti in the mayor's office, Peter White in the city council, and or the people getting their bikes geared up to ride up and down North Street. But most of the parents, like you're saying, they applaud it because they understand it. And I just hearken back to think about this one lady who was so happy because you brought it up. Her daughter was so bullied, in school and out of school, and it really affected the young kiddo. And there's a place for everything, and in the school day, I don't see a place for a cell phone. Of course, I had the one person. Well, what if there's an emergency? Well, call the school. They're real cool. They have somebody in every school that answers the phone. Honestly, I've done it, and I mean you can't make it up. But I applaud the school committee for doing it. I hope it works out, because it has to be. I mean, it's a disruption. I mean, I shut our phones off, at dinner and things like that. And if it's that important, of course, then we get the scam calls on the other phone, so it doesn't make any difference. But I just really hope that people embrace this. Parents, please embrace it, because it will only better the education of your kiddos.
Yeah, this is not a one-and-done thing. This is an ongoing project for as long as people have personal communication devices, whether they're Dick Tracy-like two-way wrist radios or cell phones or whatever. It has to be reinforced and re-explained every year, because we get turnover with staff, turnover with students, and it's a chore for teachers. It's a real chore. Their jobs are hard enough. I saw something on Facebook and the other day that where the commenter said that if citizens, as they must report for jury duty, also had to report as substitute teachers, their attitude toward the challenges of public education would change dramatically quickly.
Absolutely.
I don't think people understand how hard teaching is. It's always been important. There have always been kids who need help. It's a very different environment that teachers have to work in now. And it's getting very difficult to find people who want to go into teaching or into school administration. There's so much flack that they have to put up with, and the challenges, the social challenges that many kids pose are much greater than was ever the case before.
Well, I witnessed a situation one time at the old Taconic of an irate parent defending the impossible defense of a child's attitude in the language used by a child. And I have to take my hat. I'm not going to mention the players, but I just thought, you know what? I don't know what they pay these people, but whatever it is, they should kick it up a notch or two, because this was just out of control. And now, of course, after watching the father, now we know where the kid got the language. So anyhow, we won't go. Bill, we got about 2 minutes left. We got a challenging year coming up, a couple more than one. But I watched the school committee, in this, even some of the subcommittees. Really, I have no life. But I applaud you for what as a group, as a team, you're trying to do for the betterment of the kids in school. Because the one thing I learned with violent youthful offenders is, I would say a percentage of them, a significant percent, had learning issues. The education wasn't reinforced in the home. It wasn't important. They had learning issues. And then what happened out of the learning issues, behavioral issues grew. So the IEPs and all that, they're really needed, but sometimes they're not totally embraced by the student or the parents. And that's not the school department's fault.
To state the obvious, Bill, students would do a lot better, and the school environments would be better if parents could count on the faculty and the staff at schools to do their part of the education work.
Yeah.
And the schools could count on the parents to support that. We have many, many families where that's the case. We have some families where that's not the case.
Right.
The collaboration between the school and the kids' home is really crucial. It creates so many barriers if it's to the kids succeeding if that breaks down. So, yeah. You know, there's a lot of responsibility placed on the schools for keeping parents informed and working with them. But I hope that we can, as an institution and the people working in it, can get the support of the people who are raising the children that we're trying to educate, because right. I think the educational process would be much more successful if that were the case.
In closing, I would say this to my viewers and listeners: before condemning, inquire and get the facts. Don't listen to the guy sitting next to you in the coffee shop or the bar or the restaurant or on a ball field. If you have questions, before you condemn, inquire. I've always found that to be, that's how I try to live my life. I before I condemn, I try to inquire to get all the facts. And then the biggest majority of the time, I change my opinion when I get the facts. Bill, I'm going to let you go. I want to thank you so much for coming on, for being so candid and honest. And please, to Kristen Behnke, please tell her that as a taxpayer and as a concerned citizen, thank you for what she did. And thank all the school committee and the administration and the teachers, because, you know, a lot of, as you probably, Bill, just said, listeners, viewers, a lot of people aren't going into education. So that will hurt us in the end. To Bill, to all of you, God bless. And today, let's do something for somebody else. Let's be nice. There's enough vitriol and hatred and meanness in the world. Smile, give somebody a call, say hi, say thank you. As I said just the other day, I said to somebody, thank you. And the lady who's younger than I am, but who isn't, she said, I haven't heard those two words in a long time. So that made me feel good. Bill, thanks. Best of the bride. And I'm always here for you guys if you want to get something out.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate your giving me the time to be on this morning.
Well, no, I appreciate you coming on. You're a valued guest and you're a valued member of the city of Pittsfield. Be well. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Bye, everybody. Talk to you soon.